Welcome to the Lost Dog Podcast and the Transpyrenees Race number 2, supported by our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.
You don't know what your position is
No.
You just won.
I won.
You're number one.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
I slept for 8 hours last night because I didn't hear the
congratulations.
Alarm. I wanted to sleep for 3 hours and I woke up after 8 hours. And now I'm happy that I still won. Because after I woke up and I realized it's 7 in the morning already, I wanted to be here at 7 in the morning. So I wanted to start again at 2, so 5 hours maybe, that I'm here at 7 when the sun is coming up. And then it was already 7 and I couldn't believe it. But the good thing is now I'm feeling quite good. So 8 hours of sleep can be very good. So now I could go on.
Do you want to ride back?
No. But I feel good now.
I'm Ian Broom, and this is the 5th of our daily episodes from the mountains. And the big news today is that our race winner arrived back in Saint-Jean-de-Luz earlier today, along with our other 2 podium places. However, there's still plenty to ride for, and here to talk us through all the action are TPR veterans Jim Stewart and Rachel Batt. Hi Jim and Rach. The big news today, of course, is that we have a winner, and he had no idea that he'd won. Tell us all about it, Jim.
So, Robert Muller, he's this year's winner of the Transpyrenees race. He arrived in Saint-Jean-de-Luz after 4 days, 6 hours and 3 minutes. But he'd been so focused on his own race that entire way through, really, that he had absolutely no idea what position he was when he arrived. And it took Andrew Phillips, one of the race coordinators, to actually tell him that he had won the race. And he was pretty shocked, I think, looking at the social media coverage of that this morning. But it didn't always look that was going to be the case. So this morning, I think everybody was probably shocked when they woke up to see that he was still sleeping. And it turned out.
You thought that he was going to get in last night, didn't you? The sort of like early hours kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. It looked like he was going to press on and make it probably around, I don't know, midnight at the earliest, maybe a few hours later than that. I think he even said as much himself in one of the interviews during the day. But yeah, I think a lot of people were probably surprised to see that he was still asleep. And it turned out that he'd overslept and slept through his alarm. And I think he had about 8 hours sleep in the end, which for an ultra race and compared to what he'd been sleeping so far was a pretty whopping amount of time off the bike. So in comparison, I think Neil Phillips, who was second, he'd had about 4 hours overnight, which allowed him to really close the gap. And when we woke up this morning, there was only about 2 hours between the two of them. So it all got very exciting. I thought Robert had the race wrapped up and that was that. But I did say that if something dramatic happened, it could get interesting. And that's exactly what happened. But in the end, it sort of turned into a bit of a damn squib because Robert got up, powered to the finish, and that was that. So he maintained his 2 hour gap all the way to the finish and came first.
Yeah, that 100 kilometer lead came in quite handy.
Absolutely, yeah.
Amazing. And it was it was some fantastic pictures. We're not currently there, we're still on the parkour here in Control Car 1. But seeing the pictures and hearing his interview from the finish line was like really nice. It's really sort of fantastic to hear him speak about it, and even just to hear his surprise about his position, I thought was really, really great. So one of the interesting things about Robert as well is that I think we mentioned this before, is that he's on a hire bike. Like, it seems absolutely crackers to me that he would be able to just have a completely unfamiliar bike and then go and do something like this.
Yeah, I mean, when he arrived at the start with his own bike, he found that the fork was broken. So of course he had to quickly do something to save his race or just not start. So he got a hire bike. Unsurprisingly, at the finish, he was reporting a few issues with knee pain, which, I mean, I can't believe that he rode all of that on a hire bike. I mean, Jim and I had bike fits before TCR. And when we finished TCR, we had a few little niggles. So we had another bike fit before we did TPR. So we did them in the same year. And I mean, we were fine on TPR, but like, I'm sure that's down to a good fitting bike and familiarity with our own bikes. So it's incredible that he's managed to do this. But he also said that he had to cut his shoes open because he was struggling with painful feet. Obviously, that didn't hinder him too much. But I guess it'd be interesting to know what would have happened if the race had carried on a little bit longer. But yeah, I mean, it's an impressive feat to complete it under those circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, knee pain has been quite a common complaint. I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? All the elevation. But yeah, almost every rider today mentioned it. That they were struggling with their knees in one way or another out on the parkour on the way back to St. John de Luz. One of the other things about Robert is that he's barely seen anybody. We saw him at CP 3, so he took the gravel route, which we talked about in a previous episode, and he arrived there in second position, and you may remember him saying that it was the worst route ever to get there. he said it about 3 times, actually. And he saw a couple of riders there, but then after that, he's almost been riding his own race. Like, there's no one else around him. Whereas I'm out there on the parkour today, and you know, everyone's riding their own race on their own. But you inevitably, you know, with stops and everything, you see other people. So you feel, I imagine, you feel like you're part of something larger. You're doing your own thing, but there are other people around you at some point. It must be quite a different experience if you're out there literally on your own. Just going.
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, it's not really a position we've found ourselves in because we're usually sort of in the middle of the field somewhere. And we're obviously, as a pair, we've got each other as company the entire way around the race. But yeah, it's remarkable, really, that there's been no real leapfrogging at the front. That's more what's typical of a race like this, particularly the shorter events, I think, that you tend to see sort of a few leaders battling it out and overtaking each other several times through the race. But yeah, he's gone out, got to CP3 second, was shocked at that, got to CP5 first. Presumably he was equally surprised about that as well. And then he's just carried on. And I think he thought this morning when he'd overslept that he was going to finish sort of fourth or fifth. I don't know why, because presumably he would have seen someone in that case, unless they all passed him in the night. But yeah, he had no internet connection on his phone, so he's not been able to check the tracker. And even if he wanted to, he wouldn't have been able to. So yeah, I just can't. I find it astonishing, really, that he's gone through this entire event just riding his bike.
Yeah, so an amazing achievement. So well done, Robert, from us, because it's been amazing to watch. And yeah, he does an incredible achievement. Since he arrived back in St. John de Luz, we do have a runner-up, though.
Yeah, we have a runner-up, Neil Phillips, who arrived at the finish in 4 days, 7 hours and 58 minutes. He's put in a really styling performance as well. And for a while this morning, it did look like he might sneak past Robert and take the win. But unfortunately, it was not to be this time. Hopefully he'll come back next year and maybe it'll be third time lucky for him.
Yeah, another amazing performance. And we saw Neil quite a lot on the kind of the route out. And he just seemed to be really consistent, just always kind of, again, doing his own thing, plugging away and just making constant progress. So well done to Neil too, of course. Another brilliant achievement. We have a third place. I don't think I even realised this because I've been getting into the hotel and such things. But so we have a third position now as well in St. John de Luz.
Yeah, so Alexander Kopp has just arrived in Saint-Jean-de-Luz to round off the podium places. He's also set a really good steady pace throughout, and he seems to have struck a pretty good balance between time on the bike and taking the time that he needs to get recovery. Then he finished in 4 days, 14 hours and 54 minutes. And just a bit behind him is Julien Wasard, who's on track to finish in fourth. He's just finished the final parkour and will be heading towards the finish line.
Fifth position has been kind of contested. I think it was yesterday, Jim, you said you thought that Jana might be able to push it from, I think she was in eighth at that time. Jana Kessenheimer, who's the leading woman, that she might be able to push a bit further ahead, and that has been the case.
Yeah, definitely. So sort of this morning, it looked like Jana and Max Priya had sort of pulled away from the riders they were with yesterday to sort of battle out for fifth place just between the two of them. And it's been interesting watching the tracker today because they've sort of leapfrogged each other in a bit of a slinky effect throughout the day. So quite often we're seeing, or have been seeing, Max kind of open a gap and then Jana just claw it back again. So it's difficult to know whether that's legitimately what's actually happening on the road and whether it's just a tracker kind of data thing. But either way, strong performances from both of them, and Jana's certainly going to finish fifth or sixth. I think Max actually set off in a slightly later wave than Jana, so he also has a bit of a five-minute buffer. So he could finish 5 minutes after her and still beat her to fifth, technically. But as it stands right this minute, I think he's got a bit of a gap on her now, so he may well take the fifth place and Jana will come in an incredible sixth.
And almost definitely the first woman backhander. So what's the situation in the women's race?
Yeah, so while Jana is well ahead of the rest of the women's field and is probably going to be the first woman to finish, Simone Dair is still going really well in second place. And she has opened up roughly a 90K advantage over Nicola Ray this morning. She has also climbed into the top 20 overall, which is cool for her. Simone's currently on the Tourmalet, but should put her well within the reach of the finish sometime tomorrow. And Nicola, having made it to her planned stop in Tarascon-sur-Ariège last night, it looks like she had a good rest and she's been putting in a really good effort trying to catch Simone. But I would say that it looks like the gap's now too big for her to close before the finish. But she should comfortably hold on to third in the women's race. The final two women in the GC race are Lucy Hearn, Cap 77, and Angela Walker, Cap 11. They've both really made good progress today. So hopefully they'll make the finish before the race cut off.
Fantastic. And very early this morning, it was still dark. We were out on the hunt trying to find the leading pair, which is Izzy and Innes. And they looked fantastic. They'd had a good rest. They were planning, I think, to go right to the end. They decided that they were just going to go for it and try and get all the way to Saint-Jean-de-Luz. And they are still the leading pair. So any idea where they are at the moment and what else is happening in the pairs race?
Yeah, so they're putting in a really strong performance, Izzy and Innes, and they're sort of on the approach to Bagnères de Luchon right now. So they've covered quite a lot of ground already today. And as you said, they said in an interview this morning that they're planning to try to push all the way through to the finish. So I think we're going to see them ride through the night tonight and probably through quite a substantial proportion of tomorrow as well to get there. So I think if they keep pushing through Bagnères now, they'll be tackling the Perisord as their next hole. And they've got a decent lead now. And if they keep going and do ride through the night, I think it's going to be very difficult for the next pair on the road, Stuart and Hugh, to catch them. Already there's two calls that separate those two pairs. And if as soon as he continues through the night, then that's just going to get wider, that gap. Also got a third pair chasing down Hugh and Stuart. So the third pair on the road are Alexis Dumeau and Lauren and Julie. And they're currently around 35 or 40K back on Stuart and Hugh. So it's going to be interesting over the next day or so to see whether there's already too big a gap for that to be closed or whether they're going to actually claw their way back and fight for second place in the Pez race.
Fantastic. So there's lots of stories still to be told in this race, which is good news. We shall continue over the next couple of days doing these updates and this podcast. Before we move on to our kind of topic of the day, which is now its official title, because I said that out loud yesterday. it's a section. We've got a section. Scratches. So there are a few more scratches day five. Let's just quickly go through those.
We're sorry to hear that Damian Cebulski, cap 37, scratched, along with Bernd Sartingen, cap 146A. Michael Scale, cap 90, Aaron Snyder, cap 4, and Michael Snyder, cap 81.
So let's talk a little bit about motivation. It's something that we kind of mentioned a little bit yesterday, and it's also, I suppose, this idea of riding your own race. Again, a phrase that we've used a lot, and actually when I'm speaking to people out on the route, it's quite often what they will say when I say, how is it going? And they'll say, I'm just riding my own race. So I wondered if we could talk about kind of those two things in tandem a little bit. And I guess what it kind of means to you as an idea.
Yeah. So I guess that like you say, the two things, motivation and riding your own race, are heavily linked to, in my mind, really. I think certainly towards the end of an ultra race, a lot of people, when they say I'm riding my own race, they probably have no choice but to do that, because it's not like you've got the strength left to chase people down or change the pace that you're riding. You just find yourself slipping into what Rachel calls her one speed. You can only ride at one speed, and it doesn't matter whether you're going up a steep gradient or slightly lesser gradient. You just ride at that one speed and you just cover the distance. And that's, to me, that's what springs to mind when you say riding your own race. You just ticking off the kilometers as best you can and trying to look after yourself. And I think motivation certainly comes into that, because it sort of takes a really strong person to simply be motivated to ride in an event like this, just purely by the ride itself. And particularly later on when you're getting tired, things start to hurt. Most of us, maybe not in the case of Robert Muller, but most of us, I think, need to have some sort of bribe or distraction to keep us going. Personally, I like to kind of break our route down into small chunks and in my head and kind of tick them off one by one. So maybe sort of 10 kilometers, and I can count them down and sort of work out proportionally how much of the route we've done in the day, what's left, and kind of just keep calculating things just to keep me busy. Rach sort of has this mental threshold of 100 kilometers to go on a day, and that's sort of consistent with a typical kind of weekend ride at home. And so once you get to 100 kilometers to go, you kind of know that you can cover that because you do it on a weekly basis. I think it's all kinds of things like that, really.
And what about this idea also that you kind of ignore everyone else too? So I'm not sure Robert Muller does have one speed. If he does, it's quite a quick one. But he certainly seems to have kind of just done his own thing and paid very little attention to what's been going on around him, not checked his tracker. He's just kind of, you know, in the zone, I suppose, just done his own thing and kind of like ignored the world around him.
Yeah, I think it takes a special type of rider to be like that. I think there's grey as well, but I think you probably get one type of rider that is like Robert and can just go into the zone. It's like riding his bike is like some form of meditation. Like you go into yourself, you're just happy riding along, and you don't need to look at the dots. You don't need stimuli. And I mean, maybe I'm romanticizing it, but I'd like to think that that's a sign of somebody who's just at peace with themselves and is having a great time riding along on their bike. He certainly comes across that way. Whereas I think the sort of flip side is more like Jim has said, where you are riding your own race, but your own race requires stimulation. You require those little sort of motivating things to pass the time. Or maybe if you're like at the front end of the race, your race is to like calculate how far ahead the right or behind the riders around you are, and to think about, oh, well, if I stop for this long, then this, and if I do that, then what are they going to do? And I think that is also still riding your own race to an extent. It's just a different way of tackling it. You're kind of dealing with the race in your own way.
And so what kind of things might have a negative impact on your motivation that would, I guess in this case, that would be enough at the extreme to make you want to stop, to scratch? But even just to maybe to have like a few extra hours sleep, or to go to, you know, get the bike fixed, there comes a point where you have to stop carrying on, I suppose.
Yeah, so there could be a range of things, really. But I think the things that most often lead to people needing to scratch tend to be physical. So things like saddle sores or the niggling injuries. We spoke earlier about knee pain. That's pretty common. And once your body starts to hurt and it gets to a point where you can't really push on anymore, then scratching is definitely the right thing for you to do, because you don't want to cause yourself sort of long-term injuries, because at the end of the day, it is just a bike race. But there are other things day to day that can just get you a bit down and kind of make you sort of wish you were a bit further along the route than you actually are. And things like bad weather or just traffic. I mean, if you're on a fairly busy stretch of road, it can be pretty irritating being constantly passed by cars, and you get a bit sort of het up about it, and you'd rather just not be there. And so all those kind of things can really start to play on your mind. A common thing as well, we've already seen scratches this race through mechanical problems, but just sort of niggling problems on your bike that are just irritating can really get you down. But on the flip side of that, there are obviously positive things as well. So if you have a period of good weather, I mean, this race has been, apart from the first day, has been pretty fortunate in that it seems to have been glorious weather throughout. So you get to really enjoy the mountain scenery then. You get to really appreciate where you are and how sort of lucky you are to be in a position to be able to ride your bike through the Pyrenees. But equally, resting well can make you feel great the next day, or even eating well. And then you're going to get coffee in a half an hour's time down the road. All those kind of things that you just sort of tick along thinking about and then treat yourself with when you get there.
And it must help being in a pair, I think. We've been talking about it in the control car. I've never done anything like this. You may have noticed. But I was immediately attracted to the idea of doing it as a pair, just because of having someone to share that experience with. It immediately kind of appeals to me that. But I guess that might be helpful for motivation too.
Absolutely. Being in a pair can really help with motivation. I mean, you've got constant company, someone to cheer you up when you're feeling down, and vice versa. I know there's been various times where, I mean, I'm the one who ends up sitting in the gutter crying, and Jim is absolutely the one who's like, it'll be all right, come on, keep going. And that's so good as a pair. It just keeps you going. And you hope that when one is down, the other one's up, and it can swap, and you just keep each other going. But obviously, conversely, like if one part of the pair is really struggling and wants to scratch, obviously, I imagine like that sort of thing can demoralize both of you. So there are downsides to it, but there's massive ups to having somebody there with you. And we never really wanted to do an ultra race as solo riders, because we just prefer to share the adventure and have company on the road.
Fantastic. Okay, what are we looking forward to tomorrow? There's still plenty of racing to be done. What are you going to be looking out for?
Yeah, so I guess the first thing is going to be who wins this battle for fifth place between Max and Jana. As we discussed earlier, I think it's looking more likely to be Max, but either way, Jana's put in an incredible ride, and it's great to see her nailing a top 10 finish. But I would secretly like her to, well, not secretly now, just told everyone on the podcast, but secretly like her to pit Max to the fifth place finish. But I mean, the rest of the places in the top 10 are all up for grabs as well. So as it stands right now, just behind Jana and Max, there are two riders on the road who were vying for the seventh and eighth spots. But then a little further back from them, there are four riders close together that are all after the final two top 10 places. And I think that's going to be a really interesting battle through the day tomorrow. And then I guess the main topic, now that we've got our winners and we'll have our top 10 kind of probably by early afternoon tomorrow, the thing that's going to start drawing focus is the riders in the mid-pack and who's going to make it to the finish for the party and or the GC cutoff after that. And so one of the things that we're going to be sort of looking out for is who is going to make it far enough tomorrow that they have they've left themselves the right amount of distance to get to the finishing time. So we think that could be somewhere around the Tourmalet or over the Tourmalet, ideally, for mid-pack riders. So it's going to be interesting to see who's there and who's not.
Marvellous. Thank you. Thank you for your insight. As always, we will be back tomorrow with more updates from the mountains, and I shall speak to you then.
Yep, great. Have a good day tomorrow.
Yeah, enjoy.
If you have any questions you'd like us to tackle, send them to tpr@transcontinental.cc and make sure you follow the TPR2 hashtag on Instagram and updates from our social media channels. Thank you to our race partners, 200 Magazine, Physique, Kinesis, Komoot, Pedaled, and Tailfin.